Hello, listener. Welcome to episode 4 of ADR, that is Area De Rigori, your weekly dose of all things culture, all things Serie A. I am Danish Iqbal. I'm joined by...
Maxi.
Maxi what?
Maxi Angelo.
That's right. We are the Serie A podcast for breakingthelines.com. Go ahead and check out all the articles on there. How are you, Max?
Yeah, I'm good. Just back from work. Very exciting night of Champions League football. Napoli run riots against Liverpool at the Maradona.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about some other things as well. But it seems like we've been talking about Napoli quite a bit recently. It felt like one of those nights where they were due to have a, you know, one of those teams that sort of is on the periphery of being good to a lot of people and then gets really good in the mainstream, or like has a performance in the Champions League where people sit up and take notice, if you know what I mean.
I'm
not sure if I explained that in the best way possible, but yeah.
No, but I think I know what you mean.
Like it was hipster to like Napoli before and now it's not. But certainly lots and lots to go through today. We'll kick you off with the scores. So Fiorentina Juve was 1-1 on Saturday. Milan Derby on Saturday was 3-2 to AC Milan. Lazio 1, Napoli 2 shortly after. They got their scheduling spot on that Saturday, didn't they?
Yeah.
Was God damn.
Super Saturday.
And then they hit you with the classic Cremonese 0, Sassuolo 0 on the Sunday. Spezia 2, Bologna 2. Verona 2, Sampdoria 1, Udinese 4, Roma 0, Monza 0, Atalanta 2, Atalanta top. I think they've only dropped 2 points against Milan. Salernitana 2, Empoli 2, and then Torino beat Lecce 1-0 to finish off the games. There's 3 games on Monday. I did not know that, actually.
Bologna beat Monza by firing their manager at first.
Yeah. What? Sorry, explain that.
Yeah, I was sure that that Monza were going to fire their manager first of all the Serie A teams, but Bologna fired Zinedine Mihajlovic today.
I saw that. Well, was that not by mutual consent? I thought.
No, it was because of poor results.
Right. Okay. Just because I thought maybe with his illness and everything, they had mutually decided. Look, it's not gonna.
Oh, maybe it was something like that, but on their website they talked about the results being poor.
Yeah, no, it was win. It's been a winless start. They've got some very good players, Bologna.
But they've also lost some very important players this summer, like Matias.
Yeah, Wolle, Aaron Hickey,
Arthur Theot.
Aaron Hickey.
Yeah.
Aaron Hickey.
Aaron Hickey, yeah. We're about to lose Arnautovic to United.
Aaron Hickey. but it's going to be interesting to see what goes on there, because I think there's been a lot of people that have said that they could have played much better in like, but this is the problem with football now, modern football anyway. Everybody wants to play like a progressive possession pace, and everybody wants their team to be fun and win at the same time and score lots of goals, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's not the reality.
But no, of course not. But let's see what happens with
Bologna. You know what? I want to add something there.
Go on.
Everyone wants your team to do that except Max Allegri.
And then everyone who watches Allegri is just shocked at the fact that this occurs. And then Max comes on into an interview after and says, yeah, so what? I don't care.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines. He'll come up with some ludicrous quote. We'll talk plenty. We'll talk Fiorentina Juve. We're going to talk some Milan Derby. We're going to talk some Lazio Napoli. But I think because it's appropriate, why don't we start off with the Champions League fixtures have happened Tuesday and Wednesday. The Italian teams have played. Milan drew 1-1.
Against Salzburg.
Yes, they did. Juve lost 2-1.
Against Paris Saint-Germain.
And tonight, Napoli beat...
Liverpool.
Yeah, you were synchronized perfectly there. I wondered if you catched on. But Napoli mauled Liverpool 4-1. That's the game that's just happened. Let's talk very, very quickly about that.
Yeah, it could have been...
It could have been six or seven. Everybody, including Kvaratskhelia in particular, was terrific for Napoli tonight.
I thought Piotr Zielinski was fantastic too.
I thought Zielinski was fantastic. Was surprised that Osimhen took the second penalty off of him and then didn't score. Has Osimhen done that before? I feel like I've watched Osimhen miss penalties before.
I don't have any facts on it, but I think I've seen that as well.
I feel like he's missed a penalty or two before. It might just be me. Anyway, it didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things because they mauled Liverpool. Like, they just absolutely mauled Liverpool.
It was brutal.
It could have been much worse. Could have been much, much worse. There's been lots of talks of Kvaratskhelia. There's been lots of talks of Osimhen, obviously. But I quickly want to talk about the pivot of Napoli, Anguissa and Lobotka. Anguissa absolutely ran things tonight. We've been saying it for so long, or I have anyway. It's like the perfect combination in that pivot of Lobotka and Anguissa, one man who basically breaks through the press, is the conductor from deep, and Anguissa who can ball carry, also defend at the same time, but put fires out and then join in the attack. We're going to talk again about the Lazio game from the weekend, but Napoli looked particularly dangerous in that game in the second half when Anguissa decided to join the attack and accelerate more forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think that we need to give a shout out to Zielinski as well, because he's...
He's
orchestrating that attack so well.
Yeah, he is. We've said it like 100 times, I think. But they lost Koulibaly, they lost Insigne, they lost Mertens, but they've become an incredibly fun team to watch in that rebuild in such a short amount of time.
I think the peaks you've seen of them this season so far are higher than the peaks they had last season.
Yeah. There's going to be times as well, though, when it drops off, but they luckily have a Victor Osimhen who creates something out of just nothing. He'll run into the channels. He'll bustle defenders away. I tweeted it earlier, but this was not a good game for an out-of-form Virgil van Dijk to play against this attack tonight. In transition, it was mainly in transition. So Liverpool would go on attack. It would either break down or Napoli would quell it. So maybe Anguissa or Akim would break it up and then pass out from the back. And then from there, they were just away every single time. It was like a 3-on-3 pretty often.
Liverpool's midfield was more or less non-existent. And Napoli's midfield manhandled them.
Yeah,
but we talk about Van Dijk, then we haven't even talked about Joe Gomez. That's probably one of the worst performances I've seen from a Liverpool player under Klopp.
He lost the ball often because Kvaratskhelia and Osimhen just hounded him whilst he had the ball.
Yeah, but, so I mean, whenever of course, but he was so naive on the ball. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but he was naive. He thought he had the upper hand all the time, but he never did.
Yeah. But that's what I was saying in terms of they hounded him well enough so that they just stole the ball off of him a few times. So in terms of like if he was going to pass it back to Alisson or pass it out, Kvaratskhelia or Zielinski would be on him straight away. But I think Liverpool are really suffering from Matip not being in there. Strangely enough, I couldn't tell whether it was because of the game state. It was already 3-0. But the changes that they made, they did look a little better in the second half. Just a little, though. Nothing to shout about.
Yeah, and I mean, it sounds like a bad excuse, but I also feel like this Liverpool team is suffering from fatigue. I mean, if you
watch some
of the replay, they barely jog back. They're so tired, they even like in the first half.
Yeah, yeah. The Klopp's words ring absolutely true now when he said, we're going to need to continue our pre-season into the season. He said this in the summer as well. He said, physically, we're not ready at all. We're nowhere near where we need to be.
Yeah.
So there's big problems abound for Liverpool. Quick word on any of the other Italian teams in the Champions League. Anything else?
Yeah, I thought Milan kind of had a hangover from the derby. I mean, Salzburg's a good team. They've shown that before. They beat Bayern Munich last season, but I think this Milan team should have won. But they looked...
They should
also
have.
A bit tired.
It took time for them to get into it.
Yeah.
It feels like a lot of games, it's taking Milan time to get into it. They kind of need a wake-up call. I've not seen a game this year yet. Perhaps maybe the first one, but I don't think that counts, where they've just started like a house on fire. They were doing that a lot last season, where they'd blitz you in the first 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. But they eventually came into the game, and then, Liao hits the post in the basically the last kick of the game, so it could have been a win. But yeah, margins.
Yeah, 1 point and onwards and upwards. Quick word on, did you watch Juventus PSG?
I did.
What did you think?
I mean, it was quite clear.
I think they could have got a point.
I think so too, yeah. But it was clear that the individual quality at PSG were a lot better than at Juventus, because that's basically what they won from.
It was, but the game became very strange in like the last 30 minutes, where Juve were like, hold on, we can actually get a point here. But the pace of the game was so slow, and they had many situations away that Rabiot had it, or Leandro Paredes, by the way, looks a great signing. He was playing passes through the lines, passing quite a large distance, just finding Juve players. They would get it in attacking situations and then just sort of not know what to do after.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it briefly a bit later, but it was like that against Fiorentina in the week as well, at least in the first half, because in the second half, Juve basically collapsed. But in the first half, he wrote lines and recycled the ball. It feels like that kind of controlling midfielder, which Juve has been lacking.
Which they needed, and they're going to need, because Pogba's injured till at least January, is what Allegri's saying.
Yeah, he tried some kind of conservative treatment, but it didn't work. He trained, I think it was Monday and Tuesday this week, but couldn't continue, so eventually they had to have the surgery anyway. So he had his surgery on Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken, and now he will be out. Yeah, like I said, to January, but I think he hopes to be back for the World Cup, but I don't see it happening at the World. There was some kind of specialist interviewed about it as well, and he said 12 weeks, and the World Cup is in 10 weeks, I think.
Especially when you've had as many injuries as Pogba has, it'll probably be hard for him to get back quickly, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you know he had surgery on Tuesday? Do you have his hospital schedule or something?
No, because they Dr. Max released a statement on Tuesday night or something, like Paul had a successful surgery this evening.
I thought Filip Kostic looked pretty dangerous as well.
This was one of his better games for Juventus, I think.
It was probably one of his best games since arriving, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. He's not really been bad in the league, but in this game, he stood out more.
They need Chiesa back just as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I thought Di Maria looked great as well in the first game, but he's injured now as well.
Yeah, they do have quite a few injuries. Since we're talking about them anyway, why don't you give us the lowdown on what happened against Fiorentina.
Yeah, so basically, Juve played a good first half, created a bit. I think they scored their goal in the first half as well. But in the second half, they kind of collapsed. Fiorentina ran the game, and Juve, I think they didn't have a single shot on goal in the second half. Was kind of only playing against their goal. They had to defend, and Fiorentina came close a couple times to scoring a winner. So I think Juve is pleased with 1 point. Seeing to the circumstances, of course they wouldn't be before the game, but honestly, it was kind of weird because they played a very solid first half, but then they just collapsed. I don't know why.
It seems to be happening a lot, though.
Yeah. But as I said, I thought that Paredes looked great in the first half. In the second half, he, as the entire team, kind of fell off. But he looks like a great signing for them.
Yeah. We will watch the space then in terms of that. The Italian teams in the Champions League this week. Oh, sorry, I also missed another result because it was just tonight. Inter lost 2-0 to Bayern Munich. But I haven't watched any of that game, so yeah.
Yeah, I watched some of it, and from what I saw, Inter weren't even close to winning. Bayern were the better team.
They're going to have a good time trying to get out of that group.
Yeah. Leroy Sané was great. He scored a great goal as well. He and Mane seems to find each other very well.
Yeah. I wonder if Mane is going to now fire Bayern Munich to at least like a Champions League semi-final.
Yeah. It's kind of weird because you know Mane was great from his time in Liverpool, but it says something now about how good he really is that Bayern doesn't really seem to miss Lewandowski because of Mane.
Yeah, completely. And then they'll go up against each other as well.
Yeah, I think it's next week.
Yeah, what? Next week?
Yeah, I think so. Because they need to...
Oh, because of the schedule. It's the schedule. Yeah,
exactly. They need good to God, have the relentless. Done before the World Cup.
It's relentless.
Yeah.
It's genuinely, it's too much. There's too much football.
Too much.
I mean, it's fun, but there's games. Wow. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Liverpool might actually collapse from the schedule.
I mean, at least there's after the next round of fixtures in terms of league and then Champions League, there is in the normal fixture again on the Saturday, but then there's an international break.
Great.
Which is frankly a little bit needed sometimes.
Both yes and no. I mean, it's now it's just World Cup qualifiers, but there's been international breaks where there's been like two Nations League games and one friendly. And
then I feel like in a season like this, the players will get exhausted in the winter. Like now, there's still the opening buzz of like, oh, there's the football's back, and oh, this player looks good, and oh, that team looks good. After like 10 to 15 games, 16 games, when it gets cold, we're gonna see plenty of boring games, like plenty.
Yeah.
But anyway, away from that sour note, we've talked at length about the Champions League. Let's move on to Lazio and Napoli. Lazio 1, Napoli 2. What were your thoughts on this, Max?
I thought it was an entertaining game.
It super was, yeah.
Yeah, and once again, Kvaratskhelia stole the limelight, showing up. I mean, he had kind of a moment there in the second half where he did the helicopter dribble. I'm not sure what it's called in English.
The Maradona?
Yeah, when you spin.
He did a Maradona?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. I don't know what it's called.
The helicopter spin.
Yeah, that's what it's called in Swedish.
He did a helicopter with Maradona. He did a helicopter with Maradona sitting in the helicopter.
Yeah, and hit like the post, and that was kind of telling what kind of game he had, because he ran riots at the Olympico. And yeah, once again, as we've discussed before, Napoli were a big threat from set pieces, much to Kim, who scored a goal. I think it was his second now, or is it his third?
It might be his second.
Yeah.
I think he's got like one disallowed or one's hit the post or something. But yeah, they look incredibly dangerous from set pieces.
Yeah, they do. But
Kim's a mountain of a man.
He really is.
I think I said this 2 weeks ago. I don't care. I'll say it again. He's a mountain of a man.
Yeah,
they seem to be getting the set piece deliveries on point directly for his head. And at that point, they weren't really at their best in the game. Lazio's pressing structure was really, really good against them in the first sort of 20 minutes.
Yeah, and that's kind of a repeating pattern this season, I think, for Lazio. I think they're pressing has been really good.
Excellent.
Pretty much
really good.
Every game.
Really excellent. They just used Lobotka as the pressing trigger. They knew he was going to receive from the center backs and pressed him.
Yeah.
So like Felipe Anderson would sort of push a little bit further. Not a little further, drop a little bit back so he couldn't play the ball to Zielinski. Immobile would then jump on the opposing centre-back or whatever ball side the centre-back was on, and Cataldi as well would push up. But their pressing was really, really good until I think round about maybe Kim scored.
It
was a pretty even game in the first half. And then in the second half, for I think around about 20 or 25 minutes, Napoli just overwhelmed them. Like they had three or four really good chances in a row where Osimhen was bursting down the line, and Guisa was bursting through midfield. Kvaratskhelia was just running rings around Lazio. I think he hit the post, maybe?
Yeah, he did. That was the moment I talked about with the helicopter spin.
Yeah, yeah. He
did that dribble, and then he hit the post with a massive shot from distance.
Yeah, the game got really, really fun in the second half. Because then whenever Napoli would have an attack, create a big chance, miss it, Lazio would try to go up the other end and just, because it's a Sarri team, just immediately score. Osimhen then hit the post as well before Kvaratskhelia scored to turn it around.
Yeah. Overall, I think very entertaining game. And I mean, seeing to 90 minutes, I think that Napoli deserved the win.
No, of course, yeah.
But I'm really impressed by Lazio this year.
They seem like they're improving.
Yeah.
We've got another big game next week. I was just taking a look at the fixtures. Oh wait, no, it's not next week. My bad. It's the week after. Never mind. Ignore me.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
Aha, so I was correct. It was Milan. It's Milan-Napoli next week, and that's just after Roma-Atalanta. Are they doing this on purpose? It feels like they're doing this on purpose because they did this last year with the scheduling, where they just put the big games all in one bunch or on one day.
Yeah.
And it's clever. It's clever viewing because Serie A has the nighttime slot of a 7:45, so nobody else. So you either have that, a choice of that, or like Real Madrid or Barcelona just smashing the crap out of a La Liga team.
Yeah. Listen to Milan's schedule from
I don't want to. I don't Sunday want to.
You're,
I don't
yes,
care.
Yes, you have to.
I don't care. I'm not
you have to.
I don't care. I don't care. Go on then.
Milan-Napoli, Empoli-Milan, Chelsea-Milan, Milan-Juventus, Milan-Chelsea.
And that's in the space of like how? But is there an international break sandwiched in between that?
Yeah, so it's
Milan-Napoli, then it's an international break. Then it's Empoli-Milan, Chelsea-Milan, Milan-Juventus, Milan-Chelsea.
Mm. I think the tactically flexible teams are going to thrive.
Fuck, in the space of 10 days.
Excuse me, I was saying something.
I didn't hear you, okay?
I was saying something.
Speak louder. Sorry. What were you saying? Speak up.
Well, look, before you rudely interrupt, all I was going to say, I think that over the next 6, 7, 8 weeks, the teams who are tactically flexible already will probably thrive the most. Like teams that don't need too much coaching every 2, 3 days to be like, okay, we're changing this week to play, if you know what I mean. Teams who already know when to change in which game state at what point, because that's what it's going to, because there's just no time to coach. Anyway, go on. What were you going to say?
Oh, yeah. In the space of 10 days, Milan play Chelsea twice, Juve once, and Empoli.
That's managerless Chelsea now as well.
But won't they have a manager until October 5th?
Yeah.
I'm scared of Graham Potter at Chelsea, to be honest.
Yeah, my God, great. Yeah, I know. The inclination for now looks like that he'll probably take it. Probably take it, but there's ongoing contacts. He's definitely earned that move.
I don't know if you saw the tweet I posted earlier, but it's kind of fun for me because he managed Östersund in Sweden from the Swedish
fourth. Yes, he managed Östersunds.
Yeah. From the Swedish fourth tier to the
yes.
So I followed him, all ever since then.
Why are you always the guy to be like, oh, I followed him first? You're that guy, you know, who's like, you're that guy who shows everyone a song, and then when
it's
it gets
my
really
territory,
big,
okay,
and then when it gets
who's
really
my
big,
manager.
And then when you know that guy who's like, oh, look at this song, and then when it gets really big, he's like, oh, remember I showed you this song. But I'm here for it. Go on, don't let me interrupt.
I won't say it anymore.
Oh, come on, I really want to hear it. Go on.
No, I basically said it all. It's just fun to see him taking over such a big club.
If it happens, but I mean here's a different take for you. Do you think Boehly sacked Tuchel with the inclination that he was going to make a beeline straight away for Potter?
Yeah, maybe.
Because, I mean, Graham Potter was very, very good last season and has been very good at Brighton, but he was really, really blowing up this season within like the first 4 or 5 games and getting a lot of clout and a lot of coverage. So maybe he had in mind to be like, I mean, also you must have a target in mind at some point. He must have some replacements in mind before making the decision to sack him.
Yeah, of course. But I don't think it was like the plan, because otherwise he wouldn't sign, you know, Aubameyang, who was Tuchel's ask.
Yeah, that's also the other thing where it's just they've spent a whole summer signing or trying to sign everybody they can in Europe for Tuchel, whilst also employing him as like this pseudo football director, because they got rid of Marina Ganaskovia, the previous director.
Yeah.
And then now they're like, okay, see you later. So, yeah. But anyway, we're venturing into a lot of other territories of football.
Yes.
Today. Milan Derby.
Woo!
Milan Derby.
Great game. Great game.
Excellent Derby. Excellent derby. Possibly one of the best derbies I've watched since...
It had everything.
Yeah.
Drama.
I love the spice, man. I love the spice. Yeah. These guys don't like each other, and that's fun.
And you know who dislikes everyone the most?
Theo Hernandez.
He just hates Inter, man.
But that's fun. That's what we like. Yeah. We need hate in these rivalries. But I think it starts from the handshake is like the much publicized video going around now.
Yeah.
Hakan doesn't shake Theo's hand. Theo then sort of I think, clips him a little bit on the back, and then there's a little bit of exchange of words, and then Theo Hernandez and Dumfries smacked into each other in like the first 5 or 6 minutes. Yeah. But that comes from like the celebrations when, I can't say in Italy, in Italian, you'll have to repeat it, but Zlatan saying, "Do you have anything to say to Hakan?" Like directly to the Milan fans as they were celebrating. Go on, go on, say it. Give us an Italian translation.
I can't remember what he said.
All he said was, "Do you have anything to say to Hakan?"
Yeah.
Well, go on then.
You're putting me on the spot here.
Come on, come on. Yeah. You speak Italian.
Un messaggio a Hakan?
Yeah, there we go. There we go. What were you so nervous about? That was awesome. But really, really fun derby. Inter opened the scoring. Lautaro Martinez did really, really well to like basically drag three defenders out with him. They all came thinking that they would steal the ball. As they were doing that, Brozovic ran through. Very easy goal for them in the end. They played it through. But then soon as Inter went 1-0 up, felt like Milan just woke up. And then within the 40 minutes after that, they just blitzed them.
Hello? What did you say? Yeah, and that's kind of been a trademark for Milan, I think, in the last few derbies. It's more or less been the same now for at least 2 or 3 derbies where they conceded the first goal, but then turned it around. And I think it was a really good response this time as well. They weren't bad before the goal, but it felt like it was kind of gasoline for them. They really didn't want to lose this game. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, that since Hakan Çalhanoğlu left Milan for Inter, everything's been so much more personal, at least for the teams. And I think both of the teams want to win, but maybe most of all Milan, because I think they are more hurt about it and care more about it than Inter do, even though, you know, Hakan loves to kind of get emotions going. But I think that basically since everything of that happened, the derby has become so much more personal to Milan, and I think that kind of raised their level, because they really didn't want to lose, and that they didn't do.
Yeah, when they hit back and they hit back with force, there was this thing like Tonali, I think, was awesome, but he was just everywhere. He was all over the pitch. He was deep. He was an extra man in midfield. He was an extra man in attack. If they would work the ball on the wing, Theo Hernandez would become an inverted fullback, and Tonali would stretch wide, like help out positionally rotate. But the way Rafa Leão finished his goals in the derby, and the way Milan came back, it was like a team that has the energy and the nous of like, okay, we're one down. It's fine. We'll just come back. And that's what like winning a Scudetto does, I think.
Yeah, and I can't put my finger on when it happened, but it felt like that last season as well.
Yeah, I think it happened when they came back to win 2-1 in the derby last season.
Yeah,
so probably. Like a little bit unexpectedly, I've been like, actually believe, like we can do this now.
Yeah, and I feel like there are plenty of players, you know, Leao, Tonali, Giroud, who step up in the big games now for Milan. They kind of thrive from it, and they show that now as well.
Yeah, I felt like early on what was happening, and that's what resulted in the first goal. Correa and Lautaro Martinez were dropping for the ball. Obviously, Correa was playing because Lukaku was injured. After that, that had sort of stopped, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. They Simeone Inzaghi started them in the Derby Inter won in the Coppa Italia last season, and I think he kind of saw that as a receipt for success and went with it now as well. But as you can see for the first goal, it worked, and I thought that they looked good together. But then after the first goal and when Milan equalized, Milan kind of took over the game for the rest of the first half and the beginning of the second half. So Inter didn't really have much to work with. The very least,
their passing out from the back was very poor. Yeah. And you take that in combination with Milan pressing like in the way they were.
They pressed very intensely.
But if you have a few situations where you pass out from the back, it doesn't work. The other team presses and causes a turnover when they do that. That's when, you know, teams get nervous. Not teams get nervous, but in a derby, it can swing the game in favor of the team. And that's what it did.
Yeah. Yeah, fully agree. But if we just look at it from a more general perspective, I think they complement each other very well, Lautaro and Correa. Lautaro is like more running deep, and Correa could be more a bit of a how should you say, roaming target man.
Yeah.
So they complement each other very well, and they seem to get on well on the pitch as well.
Extremely well. Yeah, I think that Tonali's switching or constantly just being all over the pitch really helped Milan get to 3-1. And also just Rafa Leão, the way he took his two goals just reeks of a player who knows how good he is now. He believes his own hype, and he is that confident. Inter were probably better off in the game when they made changes, when Dzeko came on.
Yeah,
Dzeko came on, Darmian came on, and Mkhitaryan came on. And surprisingly, it was Darmian's side where they looked a lot more likely to score. Like I think they just started using wing play more, using their wing backs basically to stretch the pitch and just put crosses in. And that's how they got back in the game as well.
Yes.
And then they attacked for the next 15 minutes. And Mike Maignan was then really, really good.
Yes.
I think Milan moved to a back five at the end as well to like quell this.
I think they did, yeah. No, I think it was a back four because Kalulu went out.
I think it might have been a back five very, very briefly, but just because he knew it's a derby, they're pressing, because Milan were excellent for most of the game and deserved to win for sure. But Inzaghi, with his changes, got Inter back in the game, and then I think could have sneaked an equaliser towards the end. I think there was that one shot from Mkhitaryan at the end where I was like, oh God, and it almost went in.
Yeah, I agree. But I spoke to my friend, most Interisti probably know him.
Most who?
Most Interisti.
Most interesting.
Interisti.
No, most Interisti. Let me look him up. Most Interisti.
Are you serious?
Yeah, why?
Most Interisti, as in most Inter supporters.
Oh, sorry.
Oh my God.
It's very late. It's almost 1 o'clock.
Oh, this is priceless. Oh, wait, let me look him up. please say you started Googling or something.
Dude, on my Twitter search bar, I typed in most space interesting thinking, like a big Inter account would come up.
Oh, yeah.
It did not.
This was brilliant.
It did not. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. So most Inter supporters probably know him. Sia, his name is. he said it very well that Inzaghi did the right subs, but he did it when the damage was already done. So if he had done
probably too late. Yeah,
if he'd done it, probably at least after the second goal for Milan, they would have a better shot at least getting 1 point. But now he did the subs when it was 3-1. So I think, yeah, they got one back quickly. I think Jake was basically scored with his first touch, but yeah, the damage was already done.
Yeah. They lost the derby in the end, but they showed some fight at the end. So I think let's see what happens. It's we've got one more point to do the inevitable Jose Mourinho and Udinese. Udinese 4, Roma 0. What did you make of this?
Yeah, it was basically a punch in the stomach for Roma. They opened this season very well, winning, I think, 4 out of 5, something like that. Anyway, I think they didn't know what they were expecting from Udinese, because they played smart, I would say. Dirty and smart, because they knew Roma was coming there to play football, but they kind of used that against them. They were very effective on counters and very physical, and yeah, they kind of made it hard for Roma to play the way they wanted to play.
They were really solid. I know Dybala was creating a couple of chances, but Udinese were really solid. And then the first goal by Udogi.
Udogi. Back again.
The first goal from Udogi is a mistake by Karsdorp. Then the second goal from Samardžić is a mistake from Rui Patricio. Yep. And then from there, like, you have, you know, Roma chasing the game. He used two subs at halftime. Bilotti came on. Zeki Sela came on. Zalawiski came on directly after. Almost 10 minutes after the second Udinese goal. So he was kind of throwing caution to the wind. And in that, Udinese were devastatingly good for those last two goals. Those last two goals were really good counter-attacking goals.
Yeah, in the first half, they were kind of reactive from what Roma did. But in the second half, they kind of took charge. Roma had a period where they kind of were close to an equalizer, but then in the middle of that, Udinese scores their second, and from there it's basically game over.
Yeah,
Mourinho said it kind of well afterwards that if you let one goal to Udinese, it would be tough, but if you kind of let two goals be scored, it's game over.
Yeah. The stadium was buzzing at that point as well.
Yeah, I think Mourinho kind of has a point that Udinese is one of those teams where you just can't concede first, because it will be so tough to get one back.
I think that actually it goes for most of the teams that play a mid to low block in Serie A. If they concede first, as in that, like the Seven Sisters. If a Seven Sisters concedes first against a Salernitana, or a Spezia now, because they have got Luca Gotti, or you know, an Empoli to some degree as well. It's really, really hard. Like they spend the rest of the majority of the game trying to claw their way back in front.
Yeah, but as you say, it's very tough. Because most of those teams playing lower mid block are very good defending. They might not be the best
offensively, but at least they know how to defend well.
Yeah, Romani had 2 shots on target.
Yeah. And I think at least one of those were Dybala in the first minutes of the game.
Yeah. What did you think of Roma in this game then?
Kind of sloppy, I think. It felt like they underestimated Udinese a bit.
I don't think anybody expected them to drop points like that.
No. And Roma kind of had a great start to the season and had momentum, but they kind of underestimated how tough it would be going to the Friuli.
He was surprisingly cordial in his press conferences. Like, you know what I mean? He's normally quite, there's normally a one-liner or he's blaming someone or he's irritated. In this one, he just sort of tuck it on the chin and was like, look, they've got good physical players. We weren't good enough. Move on. There's the next one. There's another training session.
Yeah.
I'd rather lose 1 game 4-0 than 4 games 1-0, that's for sure. Tomorrow's, we move on, is what he said. So.
Yeah. And he also said that we probably could have had a penalty, but when you lose this much, it's not the referee's fault, it's our own. And you know, you'd expect Mourinho to kind of zoom in on that situation usually, but now he was just like accept the defeat and was kind of humble about it.
Interesting things. We'll see how Roma gets on. Anyway, that was plenty packed in for episode 4 of this ADR Calcio for BreakingTheLines.com. Go ahead, follow us on Twitter. Tell your friends about it on Spotify, Acast, Anchor, wherever the hell you're listening to. Thank you very much for joining me and Max. We will do, I'm thinking now, because I've just remembered, we'll do Arsehole and Goat of the Week next week, part 2 special edition. So we'll have 2 arseholes and 2 goats, just because there was so much rammed in for today. It's very late and me and Max are sick of talking to each other. Nah. Just joking. Yeah.
Yes. So
Max is going to get some rest.
No, but it's 2 in the morning here.
Try and have a few paracetamol, and we will see you again next week.
Will do.